So thank you first off for joining us, Eddie. And I wanted to give you the opportunity now to explain what group you're a part of, how you would describe the Just Stop Oil movement, and what your role and what you get up to in that group actually is for our listeners.
Sure. So the Just Stop Oil Coalition is part of a broad coalition of different movements around the world, collectively known as the A22 Network. Just Stop Oil was born out of the Extinction Rebellion and Insulate Britain movements, which, as you may know, they're sort of radical fronts of the climate activist scene. So we've all heard of Greenpeace, we've all heard of Friends of the Earth. Well, Extinction Rebellion was formed about 4 years ago now in order to say that's not enough, that theory of change is not enough, we need to move into civil resistance. And they Extinction Rebellion did that fairly successfully for a while, but since then different movements have come out, one of which was Insulate Britain, who were quite a controversial movement. They blockaded the M25 and other roads in London. Just Stop Oil is essentially the latest articulation of the radical front of climate movement of the climate movement. They have a demand which is that the UK government makes a meaningful statement that it will ban all new fossil fuel licenses. The idea being that we've got a certain amount of fossil fuel reserves in this country which we need to use to transition away from fossil fuels. So we're sometimes misquoted as saying that we want to stop everything overnight. No, we don't. What we want is no new investment by the government in fossil fuels. So my role in the movement is as a participant of on the line in actions, but I also try to mobilize people to get others to join us as well. And as part of my activism, I recently spent a week in prison. I was in Her Majesty's prison, or rather His Majesty's prison, Birmingham. Was in there for a week. It was certainly a very eye-opening experience as to what goes on behind bars. There's a lot more I could say about that, but I think that answers your question.
You mentioned a couple of groups in your statement about the Just Stop Oil Coalition there, mentioning that it's born sort of out of the Extinction Rebellion and Insulate Britain side of the civil resistance in the climate movement. Insulate Britain hasn't seen the same levels of popularity and widespread support as some of the other movements. So I wonder, is it worth questioning whether this is the route to go down? Are there any other avenues, or is this the only way you can see to put this point across?
It is the only way, because what history teaches us is that if a society needs to make a radical change in a very short window of time, then the most effective means to do that is mass participation in non-violent civil resistance. What civil resistance means is blocking roads, gluing yourself to doors, shutting down major infrastructure. That's what many movements throughout history have done, including the civil rights movement in the States, including the suffragette movement in the UK. These movements were hated at their time. They were some of the most hated people and hated movements of their time. So Martin Luther King in 1963 was the most unpopular man in America, but now he's revered basically as a secular saint. And I don't say that to compare myself or the movement to him. I'm just saying this is how things go. Initially, everyone hates you, but then a few years down the line, everyone says, well, of course they were right to do that.
The question that obviously that springs to mind from that one is, if we're talking about this change happening in a very limited space of time, how limited is that time? And then if we're thinking that in a few years down the line, people will be looking back and saying this was the right action, will that be too late if this normally has the time lag of a few years?
So in terms of the time that we have, Sir David King, the former chief scientific advisor to the UK government, he was their chief scientific advisor under the Blair and Brown governments. He said last year that we have 3 to 4 years to determine the future of humanity. So that's now down to 2 to 3 years. So we do have a very, very slim window of opportunity in which to take action. In terms of whether it happens in time, that's an open question. It depends how many people come and join us and join movements like Just Stop Oil. But we have to try, basically. Whether it's too late or not, we have to try.
Better to try and fail than never to have tried at all is often quoted. But I also wonder, this current government, out of all the governments that have gone before, seems one of the least receptive to changing policies on the back of civil resistance and acts such as what we saw from Insulate Britain and earlier by Extinction Rebellion. If anything, it seemed to cause a backlash in government action, almost going the other way. And now we've seen, not necessarily linked to the Just Stop Oil protests, but the actual expansion of fossil fuel, essentially during their fracking expansion, announced by the Prime Minister and the Chancellor. So is this strategy actually working, or is it having the very effect that you're trying to avoid by making sure that those fossil fuels can no longer be used to transition away from fossil fuels by using them up so quickly?
So it's an interesting question as to whether this current government and their lack of receptiveness is something that we have to keep in mind. So obviously the ideal situation would be we've got a super receptive government that says, yes, these guys have got a point, we're going to do this, we're going to ban fossil fuel licenses, we're going to start a massive public investment program in renewable energy, we're going to research into food security, we're going to do all these things that we should be doing. So yeah, you're right to point out that we do have almost the worst possible government short of a full-on dictatorship in this country at the moment. However, we do know that what we're doing is having an effect. And the reason that we know that is that, first of all, there's been a whole branch of new legal apparatus which the government is introducing in order to try and shut us down, basically, including the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill, the Public Order Bill. These are sort of massive authoritarian pieces of legislation, basically that ban people from associating with other protesters or talking about it online. They ban people from interfering in any way with any major infrastructure project. So they wouldn't be going to this effort if our message wasn't breaking through. So the question isn't really, is this government going to be receptive to our desires and is what we're doing counterproductive? I think the real question is, how do we get the numbers to the point that it's irresistible? In other words, that the government will have to do the right thing, basically, and start the transition to the world we need to see.
Do you feel that that's ever going to happen under this government, or are you aiming this at the 2024 general election to push the Conservatives out of power on the back of this message?
Well, we might not have until 2022, because the reason for that, without I could talk your ear off about it, but basically the threat that we face from the climate crisis, which most people don't understand, is that it's like a series of dominoes, right? It's not like I'm trying to think of a good analogy, right? So there are certain things that you can do, and the more you do it, the more harmful it is. But if you stop doing it, then the harm stops. The climate crisis isn't really like that, right? It's more like if I tilt back on my chair, there's only so far that I can tilt back, and then I lose control and I fall on my head. Basically, that's what it is. That's what a tipping point means. And we don't know where that tipping point lies. I mean, the best scientific evidence puts it between, 1.5 degrees of global heating and 2 degrees. And the Met Office said recently there's a 50% chance we're going over 1.5 degrees within the next 5 years. So, and there was a paper that came out in the journal Science, which said that we're already perilously close to tipping setting off all these tipping points in the climate system, which if that happens, they can't be reversed. Basically, we lose control and the planet gets hotter and hotter to the point that it becomes essentially uninhabitable for humans. So we don't have until 2024, right? We're there's a reason I was willing to go to prison, and that's because, if we don't get this sorted, I've literally got nothing. I've got no future to look forward to, basically, is how it is. So we're targeting to answer your question. Yeah, we're it needs to happen now or not at all, basically. So come join us.
I think that there will certainly be some listeners out here who are listening and thinking, yes, no, I do want to get involved. And we will give you a chance at the end of this to put out some details around social media campaigns and where they can find more information. But a few minutes ago, you mentioned that the Conservative government was, I think, the worst possible government short of a dictatorship. So I want to talk now about a dictatorship in Russia. And I think you might have been expecting a question around this particular topic. This argument can go one of two ways, as far as many people see it. Either the invasion of Ukraine, which has caused all of these problems on global oil and gas supply, can be seen as the best possible time to transition away from oil and gas, or the worst possible time to try and find these new alternatives, because it will simply push the prices up and up in the short run. Now, that's not to say that in the long run they won't then go down because technology becomes more available, etc. But how would you seek to answer those who say, we are already in a cost of living crisis, we are already in an energy crisis? Yes, they might understand some level of the severity of what the climate crisis is going to be, but when they're given the choice between being able to heat their home over winter and then looking forward to a nebulous idea that they might not have the best picture in their mind of, how do you make them square that circle so that your idea can come out on top?
So it does bear repeating that what we're facing is an existential threat here. So basically, like, when you're in an existential threat, what you do, what it takes, right? So people are struggling in the cost of living crisis at the moment, and that's horrible. I'm very much insulated from that because I live in a student place where all my bills are already paid for, and so I don't want in any way to like trivialize the experience that people are having, but it does bear repeating that like none of this is going to matter in a couple of years if we can't feed ourselves, basically.
I would put
So
one small
go
point
on.
to you just based on that. There are some people for whom this cost of living crisis is also existential. Between over the course of this winter, if it goes down to such cold temperatures, the choice between heating and eating will get to such a point where we may well see some very severe circumstances as a result of this. But I think it is worth just adding that point in alongside your argument. But I'll let you continue with what you were about to say.
Absolutely. So in terms of oil and gas, so there's lots of had we done the right thing decades ago and got off fossil fuels and insulated our homes and done all these things which the climate movement is demanding that we do, then we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in. So basically, we're just saying, bloody hell, let's just get started, for goodness sake. I mean, out of it's not just better late than never. It's that no, we have to do this, otherwise we're all going to die. So yeah, definitely people are it's justified to say people in the cost of living crisis are facing a form of existential threat, even though it's specific groups of people rather than the entire global human family. However, I don't particularly buy this line that what we're doing now is we're going to make it worse in the short run for people, because that's a political choice, right? The global system of trading, of economics, it's human made, right? And Liz Truss has just stepped in to say, okay, we're going to freeze energy prices at £2,500 a year, and that's going to be financed by government borrowing. So we can, we can have basic energy security, basic food security for everyone, if politicians in this country choose to do so, basically. And in any case, when your country is on a wartime footing, which is what movements like Just Stop Oil are calling for, then you naturally have things like energy rationing and food rationing to the point that people have what they need. Basically, it's sort of like I don't get like political here particularly, but like it's
Go for it.
over World War II, right? You basically moved into a socialist economy, right? So you there are limitations on what people could consume, because resources were scarce, you had food rationing, you had fuel rationing, you had the propaganda posters in America, which said, you know, oh, if you drive alone, you drive with Hitler, and encouraging people to car share. You know, so I'm ambivalent about use of propaganda, but you know, if the government was to say we are in a crisis, we need you on board, a bit like how it was with COVID, right? You know, you have to stay home. I'm sorry, it's for the good of everyone, because if you don't stay home, people are going to die. We need a similar message from the government now, which is that if we don't rapidly transition away from fossil fuels and towards a renewable economy, we're all going to die, because we depend upon a habitable planet and habitable climate and biosphere for our own survival. And as we transition away, we're going to support you, but we need your cooperation in this. Now, that would be a responsible message from government at the moment. As to whether we'll get that, that's an open question.
Yeah, I just want to double check on that one. Is that an official Just Stop Oil policy to move to this almost wartime footing, or is this your own ideal version?
It is my ideal version, but again, like so Just Stop Oil only has one kind of official, what's the term I'm looking for? Like one demand, which is that the government says it will ban all new fossil fuel licensing in this country, right? So no more coal mines, no more oil drilling in the North Sea, no fracking, no new gas fields, all that basically. However, on a broader, so that's the purpose of Just Stop Oil, right? That's why we exist. But looking at the climate crisis more broadly, what we need is a revolution, basically. We need a revolution in how we live. We need a revolution in our political and economic systems. And I'm not saying that from a place of like idealism, you know, like I want to see a socialist world or a communist world or anything like that. No, it's just mathematically inevitable, right? Because if we carry on as we are, we are going to destabilize the complex systems on which our life depends. You know, it's just science. It's just empiricism, right? And so we can either wait until that catches up with us and we all die, you know, or we can you know make a sacrifice now, basically, and the outcome being that, you know, we might have a fighting chance of getting through this century.
It's often a criticism of some within the climate movement that a lot of the action seems to be focused on areas that are somewhat receptive to the arguments, but might not necessarily be the leading causes of global climate change. We're talking about China, who have been pulling out of climate accords since climate accords were invented, Brazil acting with seemingly reckless abandon on the Amazon, and now very much fighting an election over whether or not they continue with a destructive policy there or move away from one. So I know you're linked with, I believe it was the A22 network around the world. Is there any way you can convince the people here that, or the people in the UK, that the A22 network will be able to bring the rest of the world along with it? Because these are, sometimes there could be some quite large sacrifices if you're talking about food rationing and energy rationing, in order to make the world better. If it's all going to be wasted because China continues to pollute at record levels, is there any sort of assurance that can be given? Obviously no concrete assurances, but some reassurance certainly.
So just to clarify one small thing, so we're not quite at the point yet where we need energy or food rationing. Obviously we still have food surplus, thankfully, and the only fuel rationing that we need is fossil fuel, right? Because we need to stop burning fossil fuel. But if we were to have a you know, basically start a green energy revolution, then potentially we could have plentiful energy, right? I think there was even one peer-reviewed paper that says that everyone on Earth could live like the Swiss lived in the 60s. You know, there is essentially the energy and the material capacity for us to live like that. However, to answer your question, so the issue of China and Russia and Brazil that gets thrown up very frequently, you know, whenever someone says, you know, oh, you know, Britain only contributes 1% of global emissions, so why does it matter what we do? And the answer to that is we're 1% of the global population, you know, so you'd expect that we'd contribute 1%. And it's actually more than that, because first of all, in historical terms, we've contributed 4%, because obviously the Industrial Revolution started here. Mm-hmm. But also on a per person basis, on a per capita basis, we're I think in the top 25 or top 30 countries on Earth. So we actually contribute much, much more than per head than countries like, I don't know, Bhutan or Ghana or Zimbabwe or other such places where, you know, people have tiny, you know, the countries have tiny carbon footprints compared to what we do. So in terms of bringing people along, so was the question like, how do we convince people that?
Yeah, so as you obviously understand that this question comes up a lot, it is clearly something that people have in their minds, as we are this small, relatively speaking, 1% emitter. Would you seek to convince the people of the UK or other countries that their action will make a difference when it is, I would say, and I think you would probably have to agree, unlikely at the moment that you're in a position to encourage those three major emitters that we talked about, China, Russia and Brazil, to do the same?
So it's important to say that, you know, what we do is a function of what the whole system is doing, right? You know, it's not like we exist in complete isolation on the, you know, globally and geopolitically, and therefore, you know, what we do doesn't matter because that country over there or that continent over there is still causing harm. You know, we set examples by what we do, right? You know, if the UK government was to say, yeah, the climate crisis is real, it's really terrifying, it's existential, and so therefore we're going to do everything that we can to reduce our own impact, and that starts with banning new fossil fuel licenses, then the world will take notice, right? You know, it's not like, you know, and thankfully we're still in a position where the UK is a, you know, we're not one of the, you know, we don't rule the world, obviously, and thank God for that, you know. However, we are still a fairly, you know, a fairly big player, as it were, on the global geopolitical stage. So yeah, it absolutely matters what we do here, and it absolutely matters what we encourage others to do as well. It's just, we need to be seen to be leading by examples. And what's great about the A22 work is that basically it's a coalition of radical action groups in many different countries, you know, Germany, Italy, Sweden. There's others as well, but basically, it's a global community of climate activists who are basically willing to do whatever it non-violently takes to bring about the change that we need to see. So you could see it kind of like spreading like a meme almost, that, you know, so if Britain was to lead by example, it makes it easier. This is the other thing, when one country does it, it makes it much easier for the next country to do it, because you're it's a bit like how if I go out protesting, it makes it a little bit easier for the next student to go out protesting as well. And, you know, Greta, when she went out on school strike, it makes it incrementally easier for the next person to go out on school strike. So if we can get one country, the UK, to commit to banning all new fossil fuel licenses, then you could potentially see a viral effect.
I want to have one more question on sort of global implications before I move on to a little discussion around your time at His Majesty's pleasure, if that's all right. You've mentioned the system a couple of times. You also briefly mentioned that Britain no longer sort of rules the world, as it were, with the sun never setting on the British Empire, not quite fitting anymore. This begs the question around inherited disadvantages of the system we are currently in, and how you would seek to make this a fair sort of green revolution, if we're looking for that. Because obviously the first industrial revolution in the 1750s and thereabouts, as you said yourself, started pretty much in the United Kingdom, or at least in northern industrial Europe, and then spread around the world, bringing with it increasingly disadvantaged areas in sub-Saharan Africa, which have been used for mining natural resources, and other such products. If the UK and other similar nations are once again at the front of a green new industrial revolution, if we were to engage in that as a thought experiment, shall we say, how would you seek, as this global movement, to really convince those nations left behind, or some would argue left behind the first time, and still under the thumb of almost a neo-colonial trading system, How would you encourage them to move away from the very system that they have seen make rival nations, not to put too fine a point on it, filthy, stinking rich, often at their expense, in order to just be at the bottom of the pile once again, potentially?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It's a really, really important question. I only have a very small part of the answer. But in essence, if we had better sort of what's the term I'm using? Sort of multilateral institutions, and if those multilateral institutions were doing the right thing and were acting in the global interest rather than sometimes as they often act in the interest of the more powerful members, then already countries like those in sub-Saharan Africa would have received money in order to finance their development, and crucially to finance their development, which would not be dependent on exploitation of fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. So there has been, there was this agreement that was had its inception in, I don't know if it was the COP process, the Conference of the Party process, but essentially that the richest nations of the world would give the poorest nations of the world $100 billion US dollars a year in order to finance in order to help them adapt to climate change, and part of that means developing energy systems which are zero carbon. Now that hasn't been forthcoming for entirely political, entirely expedient reasons, right? And so had that happened, you wouldn't necessarily need to be asking me this question.
No.
So it really is a matter of how do we create the political systems that will do the right thing. And we've got our approach, which is you put pressure on them, you put pressure on them from the outside to do the right thing, basically saying, okay, if you're not going to do the right thing, we're going to disobey and we're going to create an economic and political headache for you until you do the right thing. Yeah. That's the essence of civil resistance, right? So I don't think that there was an interesting dimension in your question, which is, okay, so if the materials that we need for a green industrial revolution were to come from historically disadvantaged countries, then is there an issue of neocolonialism in that we essentially take those resources to build solar panels in our own country and whatever, batteries? That's a really fascinating question, which I haven't given much thought to. I can't say anything.
It was a very sort of wide scope question, and obviously I'm not expecting you to have all of the answers here. This is a very nebulous and wide reaching issue. Yeah. But something I think you may well have all of the answers to is about your time in HMP Birmingham. Now we've finally got on to the nitty gritty of, oh crikey. So just for listeners
this is my mugshot.
Oh crikey! it's the first one of those I've actually seen almost in person from someone I'm actually talking to. So it's a first for me.
Yeah.
But I want to ask before. Well, there we go. On the radio, no less, as well. But I want to ask, what was it that you were doing as part of? I'm assuming it was an act of civil disobedience and civil resistance that got you into that particular predicament. So what was the action you were engaging in?
So within Just Stop Oil, I was part of a subgroup which was called the 100 Club. So the original plan was we were going to get 100 people in prison within a very short space of time, and the reason for that is that it would get on the front papers, get on the front pages, and it would start a national debate, and it would potentially encourage others to push their limits as well. Now, in the end, we didn't have 100 people, and part of the reason for that was the Queen's death, which was very, very unfortunate timing. And people, a lot of members dropped out for whatever reason. They thought that the Queen's death would overshadow any coverage that we would have got, and that's certainly been true to some extent. It did get some coverage, but it didn't get all perhaps as much as we would have done. But that's no reason to despair. You just do it. You go home. You think, what do we do next? And how can we push ourselves further? So in terms of what we did is, and I don't want to bore you with too many details, but basically one of the UK's, if not the biggest oil storage facility is called Kingsbury, the Kingsbury Oil Terminal. It's in, I believe, Warwickshire, it's near Birmingham. And what we did is we sat outside the entrance, all 50 of us, and we blocked the entrance to where the tankers go in and out. Now, the reason why this was a more significant action than usual is because Kingsbury Oil Terminal was covered by an injunction, by a High Court injunction. And if you don't know what an injunction is, basically it's like a special legal tool which a company can apply for. In other words, they go to the court and say, okay, we're expecting to see protesters here and we want to discourage them from coming here. Will you grant us a special legal tool which makes punishments for them extra severe? That's basically, so it's basically a special form of deterrence. And, you know, it carries the threat of unlimited fines and the seizing of assets and such like. And so what we did is we all went and we broke it. We knowingly broke this High Court injunction by sitting on the road within the area that was covered by the injunction. And what this meant, there was a special detail of this injunction, which is that you need to appear in front of a High Court judge within 24 hours. So we were all whisked into police vans. We spent a night in a police cell, in various different police cells. And we appeared in front of a High Court judge the next day. And we wanted to make sure that we ended up in prison. So what we did is we spoke over the judge. We said, I do not recognise the moral authority of this court because you're upholding laws which are protecting corporations which are going to destroy the planet. If I'm released, I will break this injunction again. In other words, I'll go and sit back down on the road. And if you ask me to return to this court, I will not return. So we all said this. We all said a variation on the same theme. And the idea being is that the High Court judge had no choice but to send us to prison, basically. And so we were all put on remand for about a week. A handful of the 50 people are still in there for a number of reasons, because some of them have, you know, some of them have broken this injunction before, or, you know, they were, you know, a bit saucy with the judge or whatever. You know, it's different reasons for different people. But yeah, in essence, it worked exactly as we planned, which is that we were all sent to prison within a very short period of time.
So there we go, 50 of you all in prison, I assume, for some variation of either contempt of court, the breach of the injunction itself.
Breach of the injunction is contempt of court, but we were further contemptuous by declaring our intent to break it again if released.
So I have sort of one question about this. Obviously, the civil disobedience and resistance is the key tenet of the Just Stop Oil campaign and your affiliated campaigns as well. Is there not any more value in simply being arrested and remanded in custody, and rather than going to prison, going out again with that 50 group of people, which you already said was a little bit lower than what you might have wanted, and using them as network organizers in a second event that could get more publicity in a short space of time, rather than leaving them all for a week in a prison cell or some longer?
Well, there's many reasons why it's useful. It sounds a very weird thing, doesn't it? But there's many reasons why it's useful to go to prison. So the first is that it creates a cost for the state, right? The reason why the state puts you in prison is because they need to get you out of the way. That means that you're generating, because they wouldn't do it otherwise, because it's expensive. It costs money to keep people incarcerated. And basically, if you are sent to prison, then it means that you are, you're a thorn in the back of the term is, you're a thorn in the side of the state. So it means that what you're doing is working, essentially. But in terms of more long term values, like, it also gives you credibility. Like it sounds weird. Like I didn't go to prison so that I could walk around saying, oh, look at me, you know, I was brave and I went to prison. However, it does show that I'm willing to go the distance. You know, because you know why would a 25-year-old, you know, try and get himself to prison, right? You know, it's not something that you hear very often, is it? You know, so it does show that you walk your walk, you don't just talk your talk. And as I say, it generates publicity. In this instance, not as much as we would have liked, but, you know, maybe next time. And there's a final factor in this, which is that if enough people are willing to do what we did, the state can't deal with us. So this is part of the theory of change I was mentioning earlier. You have to base what we're doing is we are trying to force the hand of the government, basically saying, you know, if thousands of people are willing to be arrested or willing to go to prison, the system can't deal with us. Basically, we overload the system. So in other words, we are trying to make it more costly to do the wrong thing than to do the right thing.
I think that sort of clears up that particular question about the merits, certainly from your point of view of taking this action and ending up at, as you say, His Majesty's pleasure rather than Her Majesty's pleasure. Still feels weird saying things like that. Yes. I think we may well be coming towards the end of the content that I wanted to get through in this interview. So I wanted to give you an opportunity now to sort of go through, if people have been intrigued by the things you've been saying, if they want to learn some more about the Just Stop Oil campaign, where can they go to find out some more information and potentially even get involved?
Okay, so the first thing to say is we do have a big upcoming action which begins on the 1st of October. So I know it's only a few days away, but it will be running hopefully for at least a month. Basically, what we're doing is in alliance with other movements, including the Don't Pay campaign and Jeremy Corbyn's Peace and Justice Project and various other sort of union movements and social justice movements. We're going to be going to London from the 1st of October and essentially blockading Westminster day after day after day, hopefully for at least a month. It's done on a rota system, so the southwest will be down one day, the north will be down the other day, the east will be on. So it's not just like everyone goes all at the same time. It's people take their turns, essentially, depending on where you are in the country. So if people do want to learn more, I would just say go to the Just Stop Oil website, or you know, drop me a message. My name's Edward Whittingham. You know, my email is ew578@exeter.ac.uk. But yeah, you don't need to go to me necessarily. Just you know, reach out to the national team, and then you'll be put in contact with someone that can tell you more, basically. But yeah, so come to London on the 1st of October, or any other day in October. Come to Westminster, basically.
So there we go. You've heard what's happened in the past. You're hearing what's happening in the future. And hopefully from this interview, you guys listening at home will have learnt a little bit more about what is going on, the reasoning behind it. And hopefully I've put a couple of good questions to you, Eddie. Thank you very much for coming on for this interview. Thank you for giving up your time for this. We may well see you on a newspaper next, or hear from you on a radio show before you may get back to us. But you're welcome back to have another interview at a later point, and we might try see if we can arrange something in the aftermath of this potential month-long Westminster protest to see how you feel it's gone. But thank you very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and we will get back to the rest of the show.
Cheers.